Chop, chop. Be on your best behavior.
You got it. All right. So let me know when you're ready.
All right. I hit record in case we said something cute at the beginning. So.
Oh my God, Whitney, that's the quote right there. Hello, and welcome to The Conversation with Susan
and Whitney,
the podcast where two friends from college discuss shared interests, insights, and how we're navigating our lives today.
This is an ongoing conversation about how we're surviving
and thriving.
We discuss the important
and the trivial
and other fun topics in between.
I'm Susan Field, a writer and teacher in Philadelphia.
And I'm Whitney Gould, a writer and marketing director in New Hampshire.
Whitney, you're the kind of friend who gives me all the details about historical romance novels so that I don't feel like an imposter while watching Bridgerton.
Susan, you're the kind of friend who always clues me into movies or masterpiece theater versions of historical romance stories that you know I will enjoy, like the new Emma, which I still haven't watched.
Oh, it's so good, Whitney. I think you're going to love it. Oh my goodness. Did you know that Oprah magazine is defunct?
I mean, it's not quite defunct, but yes, Susan, I did know. It is the paper edition, the print edition is defunct.
Okay, yeah, you're correct.
Which is sad for me because it was my favorite bubble bath magazine, and now I don't have a bubble bath magazine.
Well, Whitney, two things. One, I never have bubble bath, so I'd like to have any kind of bubble bath. And two, like, yeah, I want to have bubble bath literature. So,
I know.
But you know what? Actually, whatever we talk about today is probably going to be bubble bath literature. So I'm excited to dive into that in a bit. But yes, Oprah magazine, I have to say I've been looking for it. And then finally I looked up online, like what happened to Oprah magazine? And I saw the article. But yes, you're correct. There is still content online. So that's good to hear.
It's not the same though, Susan. I totally understand why you're grieving the print magazine. I think potentially I was just grieving it a few months before you so that, you know, I don't seem as sad as you, but I do feel, I do feel your grief and I understand it.
Well, this is fresh pain right now.
Very fresh.
So, yes. All right. Well, I'll get over it.
Well, and if any listeners have suggestions for my new Bubble Bath magazine, please let us know.
Yes, but you know, it could be anything. You could be, like I said, today we're going to talk about some really awesome novels. So maybe something there could be a good candidate for you to read in your next bubble bath.
I mean, I will just say I do also read books in my bubble bath, but sometimes, you know, you don't want to just like dive in for a long time. You just want something quick that you can page through. And that's where a magazine comes in.
So I'm assuming that you didn't mean to make that pun, like dive into your bubble bath.
I did not, but thank you for catching that because that's the kind of friend you are. You're the friend absolutely. Who always picks up on my puns or anyone's puns.
Yes, you're right. Diving into our main topic now today. So we're going to talk about historical romance. You're going to give me a crash course. Whitney, from Julia Quinn novels on which the wildly popular Shonda Rhimes Netflix series Bridgerton is based to Victorian mysteries and Civil War era historical romances featuring Black heroines, you, our in-house historical romance connoisseur, will give us the lowdown on the genre and recommendations on what to read to get our romance fix while we wait for that next season of Bridgerton.
Susan, I'm so excited to talk to you about this subject.
Well, that's good to hear. So Whitney, let's just get to it. How long have you been a fan of historical romance and what first got you into the genre?
So Susan, as you know, but our listeners don't know, I used to do line editing, which is kind of like proofreading before the proofs happen for a publishing company that specializes in romance. So they only published romance. I think I was always interested in the historical fiction genre. But it wasn't until I was working for this company doing this line editing that I realized I also enjoy historical romances because I would have to read through these book drafts to line edit them. And a lot of them happened to be historical romances. And that kind of clued me into, wow, I actually like these. And I got kind of hooked on them.
Oh, that's great. So who do you think historical romance is for? More specifically, like what kind of person would or should read this genre?
So I'm just going to start by saying that I think there's a stigma out there about reading romance in general. And there are kind of individual stereotypes for different subgenres of romance as well.
Ooh, really? That's fascinating. Tell me more about that.
So, for example, like when you think about reading a romance novel in general, romance novels kind of get a bad rap, right? They have this reputation for being either super cheesy and like outlandishly fantastical and not very true to life. They're too happy and too easy. There's the whole bodice ripper
yes.
reputation that they have to work with. And I think even some of the subgenres have that same, have stereotypes for them as well. For example, when you think of a historical romance reader, what comes to mind for you?
Well, not me.
Why not you?
I just say that only because I haven't really read that many of them. So I don't necessarily think of myself, but what I do think of is maybe like a group of older women like sitting around in their book club talking about a romance novel. Or, you know, I feel like I always used to see people on the beach, like moms reading Danielle Steele or something.
Right.
And I think I was saying to you before recording that I feel like, you know, coming from a teacher's perspective, if somebody told me they read a historical romance or any kind of romance over summer break, I would almost be like, oh, that doesn't really count. You know, it's not literature. So I agree with you that there is a stereotype.
There's definitely a stigma. And a lot of historical romance readers are not old women like sitting around their book club wearing their bonnets. You know, they're people like you and I, sometimes even younger than us. And they're people who are very smart and educated, who like a really good story with well-developed characters and witty dialogue, just like they would enjoy fiction of other genres. So I think that there's potentially a historical romance or a romance in general for any kind of reader out there. All you have to do is match the genre of romance to an interest you have. So for example, Susan, I know you're a pretty big sports fan. So you might like reading a romance novel with an athlete as the hero in the story.
Oh, yeah. Whitney, I've never even thought about the fact that there could be sports romance.
You know, if you were really into science, maybe you like astrophysics, maybe a science fiction romance or a paranormal romance could be your thing. The same is true with historical romance. If there's a certain time period that you're really interested in, if you just love history and culture in general, there are, you know, so many to choose from. Do you also like mystery novels? Because a lot
I do.
Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of historical romance novels have a mystery subplot or a romance subplot in a mystery novel. And so that's really cool. And that's a way that you can kind of meet your interests in that way as well.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, Whitney. I was just thinking as you were talking that I've lately been getting into Simone St. James. I believe that's it. The Simone St. James novels. And she writes a lot of them in like 1920s England or something. And there's a mystery. And I hadn't actually thought about that. Here I am saying like, oh, I don't read historical romance. And actually, I think I do.
Yes.
But sometimes I think we might not realize that that's what we're reading.
Right.
And actually, something else I thought of while you were talking was that I think most books, even, you know, no matter what the genre is, say it's like mystery or, you know, I don't know, anything. I feel like there's usually some kind of romantic element, right? Relationship element. So maybe there's a little bit of romance in every book.
Yeah, you could make it a solid argument for that. So, Susan, another thing that I really love about historical romances is right now in particular, there are a lot of smart historical romances out there with very modern feeling heroines. And that's something that I absolutely love in a book. So that's something that really like keeps me in the genre.
Could you tell me a little more about these modern feeling heroines?
So Susan, I have a couple favorites that I don't know if you want me to go through those, but a heroine that doesn't stick to the conventions of their time period. So if we are talking about Regency or Victorian era women, that they are not proper ladies who go out without a chaperone, vocations. Mm-hmm. Like these are women who want a career. They don't want to just like be a kept woman. There are a variety of ways that a heroine in these historical romances can be unconventional.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm really interested to hear more about those. Whitney, my next question is, why do you think people should read historical romance? And obviously, I do think you touched on that a little bit already, but what do you think is great or unique about this genre?
So, Susan, I'm an escapist reader. And for our listeners, if you don't know what I mean by that, Anne Bogle, aka Modern Mrs. Darcy, has a reading personality quiz that you can take at modernmrsdarcy.com. And my result was I'm an escapist reader, which means that I get the most enjoyment out of reading something that takes me somewhere. In this case, historical romances take me to another time period.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting for me to learn about the norms of a culture during a certain time period. And a lot of the writers in historical romance take great pains to make sure their details are historically accurate if possible, unless potentially something they want in the plot can't happen with those historically accurate details. So I get to kind of learn about historical time periods in addition to having a fun escapist romance to read.
That sounds great. I love that. And Whitney, I did take the Modern Mrs. Darcy quiz at some point, but I honestly can't remember my result. I don't think it was escapist, but I'd have to take it again. It's been a while.
I think yours was something about learning.
Probably. Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, I have to go back and even see what the other types of readers are. But yeah, good tip for anyone who's interested in finding out what kind of reader they are. All right. So Whitney, why do you think now more than ever is a good time to read historical romance?
I mean, I'll point out the obvious that Bridgerton was the most watched Netflix series mm-hmm. during the pandemic. And because we're coming out of a global pandemic where it's clear most of us needed something happy to look forward to because our world was pretty scary and there was a lot of unknowns in our world, romance novels have something that's not unknown. They're always going to have a happy ending. And I mean romance, traditional romance. There is a subgenre of romance called erotica, where this is not the case, but anything that says something romance, so historical romance, erotic romance, paranormal romance, will always have what we call an HEA or a happily ever after. So that means there's always going to be a happy ending. And that's a big plus, right? Especially in a time that we're thinking potentially of not the happiest thoughts, or, you know, we might need some comfort. So
yes.
I like fiction that can take me somewhere. And I think we all potentially want to escape to a different reality during this pandemic. And historical romance can be great for that.
Sounds like it. I love this idea of escapist fiction, especially now, as you said, when we so often want to escape. Can you tell us more about some of the worlds or time periods that you can be transported to while reading historical romance?
So the subgenres of historical romance tend to be split into time periods. So there are certain chunks of time periods that it's easy to sort of categorize them in. So there are what we call ancient world historical romances. So this involves most often stories set in Egypt, Greece, or Rome. And these are set between 3050 BC to 45 BC when the Roman Empire fell. The next chunk is medieval. And so medieval novels take place from 45 BC to 1485. And popular novels set during this time can include Arthurian novels and those involving Vikings.
Ooh, Whitney, I think my mom would like those. She loves the show Vikings. I forget what channel it's on, but she loves it. And I've always been really into Arthurian legend and sort of the Camelot time period. So I feel like that would be intriguing to me.
Yes. Well, I don't have any recommendations from that period, but maybe we could explore some for both you and your mother.
Yeah, sounds good.
And then there's Renaissance is the next time period, and that usually goes from Tudor England to Georgian England. And it's pretty much anything that happens between medieval and Regency times. And then the largest current subgenre or time period of historical romance is kind of referred to as the modern historical romance era. And it when I say modern, you're going to question the word modern there because Regency and Victorian fall into this category, as do things involving the colonial U.S. and Civil War and Westerns, like our typical Western romances, so like cowboys.
Right.
Russian Revolution novels, World War One, World War II, etc. Essentially, everything in history between Regency and modern day is in the modern historical romance period.
Oh, Whitney, this is so interesting. I really had no idea about any of this. I just never really researched the subgenres, but that all sounds amazing. I also love history, so it's kind of funny to me that I haven't explored these books that have history as their cultural context. But anyway, these sound amazing. I don't know why I haven't been reading these before. But Whitney, so if you're like me and you're basically new to reading historical romance, where do you start?
So I think a lot of people right now are big fans of the Bridgerton Netflix series. So for those people in particular, I would recommend them starting with reading the full series of by Julia Quinn, the Bridgerton series. Each book in that series follows the love story of one member of the family. So, you know, the season one on Netflix was following Daphne as she had her story. So book two follows Anthony, and they go kind of in order. So book one is Daphne, book two is Anthony, book three is Benedict, book four is Colin, book five is Eloise, book six is Francesca, book seven is Hyacinth, and book eight is Gregory. So it kind of goes, they're not quite in order. They're a little bit out of order there in the middle, but that's a great series. And if you've already read all of those because you've already figured that out and you've torn through those books, I just want our listeners to know about the little known prequel series to the Bridgerton series. It's called the Rokesby series. And Julia Quinn wrote it to follow members of the Bridgerton family, but also their neighbors, the Rokesbys. So kind of two families that lived very near each other and how they interacted and grew up together and eventually had their stories. It's
That sounds great.
It's not modern Bridgertons. Listen to me.
Right.
Saying modern Bridgertons, like that's a thing. So it's much.
It is now.
It's earlier than the current Bridgerton series because it's a prequel. So I think Anthony and Benedict and Colin appear in those stories as like very young children toward the end. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you're not going to really see many of the Bridgertons aren't going to have a big, the Bridgertons that you know from the Netflix series aren't going to have a big role in that. It'll be their older family members.
All right. Well, that makes sense. So yeah, keep going. What else?
So some of my favorite historical romance writers are Tessa Dare, Courtney Milan, Alyssa Cole, and Deanna Raiborne. I love all of their books, but I wanted to highlight a series that a series written by each of them. So for Tessa Dare, the series that I'm going to highlight of hers is called the Spindle Cove series. Susan, I really think you would like this series.
Oh, I love the title.
It's set in the seaside resort town known as Spindle Cove, but it's informally known as Spinster Cove. Because it's frequented by unconventional ladies, and these ladies are usually unmarried women who don't fit into society's mold in some way. One of my favorite characters in this series is Minerva Highwood, and she's a budding geologist who often dons a swimming outfit and dives into seaside caves looking for fossils because she wants to be like a published scientist in geology.
Okay, sounds good.
And we get to see her love story happen.
Okay. So yeah, Minerva. She sounds like a good character. All right. Keep going.
So Courtney Milan is another one of my favorite historical romance authors, and her brother Sinister series is very good. And one thing I really love about this series is it's about a man's club. The secret is they just all are left-handed. But they do have one female member that they just like accept into the club as one of theirs. Her name is Violet. She's a dowager countess, meaning she married an earl and he died. But she's actually a world-renowned botanist, but nobody knows because she publishes her work under one of the other members of the club's name. And so she can remain a respectable dowager countess in society and nobody will know that she actually is a botanist too.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah. Deanna Raiborne is one of my current favorites. This series, I know I've talked to you about it before, the Veronica Speedwell series is seriously my favorite of all time right now.
Wow. That's a big billing, Whitney.
It's a Victorian era mystery and historical romance series. It's just really fun and really smart and really witty. And she is one of the most interesting heroines I've ever read. I'll talk about her a little bit later. And then I just wanted to point out for people who are interested in social justice, as I know you and I are, I wanted to point out two historical romance series that touch on social justice in their time periods. So I mentioned Alyssa Cole is a writer I really like in this genre. She has a series called the Loyal League series, and it's really cool and very innovative because it's a Civil War espionage romance series.
Ooh, that sounds great.
It is so good. And at least one person in each book in each romantic pairing is a Black person fighting for the Union as a spy. So I think in all of the cases, correct me, I mean, I might be wrong about this. I think in all of the cases, they are actually freed slaves who work as spies. And in a lot of the cases, this means they have to go undercover and go return to slavery to fight for the Union, which is a very interesting concept, right? And the series is pretty historically accurate, and it doesn't shy away from the realities that Black men and women experienced during the Civil War. So, you know, in this case, that would mean people who were freed and then went back into slavery for the greater good, to serve their country as undercover spies.
Oh, that sounds excellent.
And then another good social justice historical romance series is a newer series by Evie Dunmore called the A League of Extraordinary Women series. It's a series that follows members of a British suffragette group as they fight for women's rights in the late 1800s.
And oh,
it's really good.
That sounds great too. Whitney, these are so awesome. Thank you for these fantastic recommendations.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe that you have not read more of these books, honestly.
Yeah. I don't know. And until you're telling me about them, I feel like none of these honestly have ever really crossed my radar, other than you talking about Veronica Speedwell, that series. I just feel like I look at so many different book websites and listen to the podcast, and I've just never heard these. So thank you so much for bringing these into my life.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah. So Whitney, one interesting observation I had while you were reading off these recommendations is that I feel like a lot of these books are part of a series, whereas I feel like most of the books that I read just happen to be standalone novels. So why do you think it is that a lot of these historical romances are part of a series?
So I think potentially the genre is part of that, right? Because there's a lot of world building and character development that goes into these stories. And instead of just abandoning them after one novel, you could keep them going if you kind of wrote related stories with either the same characters in a new scenario, or if you had, you know, like a sister going through her story, or a cousin or something like that. So I think historical romance as a whole makes itself very...
I know what you're trying to say. It sets itself up nicely for having a series, yes, as opposed to just a standalone novel.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I actually love that, because it's like you said, if you enjoy it, there's plenty more where that came from, right? And I think it's really cool that there is such, you know, so many books that you can read instead of just having one novel and that's it.
Yes.
So that's awesome.
And then the story and the world building doesn't have to end as quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I feel like you can really become invested. Yeah, no, that makes sense to me now. I like that. And another question for you, Whitney. So what about Danielle Steele? I know I kind of mentioned her name earlier in the episode, but do her books count as historical romance? Because I have read several of hers, and one of her favorite books that I read is called Crossings, and it takes place during the outbreak of World War II.
Yes, definitely hers count as historical romance, because they're definitely set in like modern historical romance times. I don't know if she wrote anything that took place before the Regency period. I think I associate her with a lot of like early 1900s era books.
I think so. Yeah, and some modern ones now too.
Mm-hmm. Right. When I looked up books of hers that were categorized as historical romance on Amazon, 49 came up. So she seems to be kind of a heavy hitter in this area, even if we wouldn't have associated that with her before this talk.
Well, yeah, she's had so much commercial success. I feel like obviously I'm familiar with her and see her books everywhere, but I don't see like, say, Alyssa Cole everywhere. So it's interesting that I feel like maybe this is more like a, you know, like a niche genre where you kind of have to go looking for it. Do you think that's the case?
I definitely think it's more of a niche genre. And once you start seeing them, you'll always see them, right? The same as Danielle Steele.
Right. That makes sense. All right. So also, Whitney, when we were brainstorming for this episode, you said one of the great things about this genre of historical romance novels is that there are, quote, ridiculously awesome female heroines. And I love that term. So please tell us more about these incredible heroines.
So I already mentioned a few earlier in whenever I was talking about Tessa and Courtney's books, and I mentioned some specifics there. But my favorite heroine of a historical romance of all time is Veronica Speedwell. And she's the heroine, as I mentioned, of the series of the same name by Deanna Raiborne. A quote from the first book in the Veronica Speedwell series that I feel like describes her spirit. In this scene, Veronica's aunts who have raised her had both passed on and she was officially alone in the world at the age of 25. The local pastor's wife came to offer advice to help her seek a position in service with a respectable family because she's not royalty and she wasn't wealthy or anything. And this was Veronica's response to the woman, who's the woman's name is Mrs. Clutterthorpe.
Love that name, by the way. Right? That's so funny.
I am quite determined to be mistress of my own fate, Mrs. Clutterthorpe, but I do sympathize with how strange it must sound to you. It is not your fault that you are entirely devoid of imagination. I blame your education.
Or lack thereof. What a fantastic quote. I love that.
And that's like in chapter one of the book.
All right, I'm sold. I'm sold, Whitney. All right, going to the library like tomorrow. Fantastic.
Yes, it's, I mean, honestly, the entire series is full of insights, quotes, and just like that right there. So,
well, if you can find yourself laughing out loud while reading, that's definitely a good sign.
Yes. Deanna Raiborne, I don't know how she comes up with some of the things that Veronica says, but they're magic.
Yeah, I also feel like Simone St. James is quite humorous in some of her books too. So I've been enjoying those books a lot.
Yes. So another heroine I want to point out is Jane Fairfield from Courtney Milan's The Heiress Effect, which is part of the Brothers Sinister series. So Jane Fairfield kind of dresses a little outlandish. She's kind of a little too loud and bold, and society kind of mocks her a little bit for her expressions, both verbal and fashion oriented. So here is a quote from her that Courtney wrote in the book, The Heiress Effect. "Oh yes, in my future, a man will control all my possessions if I marry him. I shan't be allowed to vote, and I won't be given the opportunity to earn a living by any means except on my back. But by all means, the most dire threat I face is freckles."
That's good. That's good.
And then the Evie Dunmore series that I mentioned before, A League of Extraordinary Women, the second book in that series centers on Lady Lucy, who is the head of the suffragette group in the series. And she's kind of made her entire life's work women's rights and furthering their ability to own property and, you know, just all of that stuff. Like, and she's the brains behind the whole operation. Like, she, without her, everything kind of falls apart there.
Okay.
And because of this, she's kind of a workaholic and like she has no time for romance, right? So something that Evie wrote that Lady Lucy said in the second book, which focuses on Lady Lucy, called A Rogue of One's Own, is, "I'm afraid the idea that a woman is a person, whether married or not, is so inherently radical, no matter which way I present it, I shall be considered a nuisance."
Because yes,
Lady Lucy is kind of like that person that like won't let it go. And so, you know, sometimes people say, like, why don't you be more likable, or why don't you try not to bring this up enough? And she's basically saying, like, no, because no matter which way I present what I think and feel, I'll be considered a nuisance, which I thought was awesome and profound.
Yeah, no, these are good. I love these quotes. Thank you so much for sharing them. All right, Whitney. So now it's time to share some listener recommendations to offer some other perspective. So I posted on Facebook just to see what people would say, and I did get some good suggestions. So I was just going to read them out, and then you could comment on them, whether you recommend them or whatever. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So the first one that somebody recommended, which I actually have read, was the Outlander series. I've read the first book in the Outlander series. So what are your thoughts on that?
I have the first book in the Outlander series and I still haven't read it, but it's definitely on my TBR because I thought it sounded really great.
Well, my friend Melissa told me one time I was having sort of a difficult year just with work a little while ago. And Melissa said, this book will change your life. And she bought it for me like on the spot at Barnes and Noble. Like it wasn't my birthday or anything. She just was like, here's this book. It was really good. It's very long though. It's 800 pages, I think. So just be prepared for that.
I've heard people say that as you get deeper into the series, they become more like unputdownable. That like okay. they become more addictive the further you get into the series.
Well, the interesting thing is that the author, Diana Gabaldon, she's very research heavy. I think she's actually like a zoologist or something like that. She's in the science field. But I think I read somewhere that she was trying to practice writing a novel in order to, you know, like a test run before actually doing it. And this first book was her practice novel. And so I think it does sort of sometimes go in rabbit holes and it's like very research heavy and sometimes it gets a little unfocused. But overall, the research is really fascinating. I remember there were so many different topics. Like it's obviously a lot of history and there was stuff in there about like herbology and maybe even like witchcraft. So yeah, it was pretty fascinating. It's just kind of a commitment for that first book.
Yeah, sometimes the best books are that way, though. I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that we usually talk about, right? The ones that are really long and kind of take you a minute to get fully absorbed. So maybe yeah. this is that's the case for Outlander.
Could be. Yeah, it could be. I'd have to try the other books in the series to see what happens, but I did read the first. So another recommendation one of my friends said is The Other Einstein. Have you read that one?
I've not read that one, but I've heard of this one. And I think it sounds really interesting. It's about Einstein's wife. So I guess she was actually a pretty prominent scientist herself. And so I think potentially this is, you know, historical romance for sure, because I assume it explores their relationship and also her contributions to science.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'd never heard of this book, but it definitely sounds like one I'd like to read. So The Other Einstein by Heather Terrell is the author. All right, let's see. Someone else recommended the Philippa Gregory novels that take place during the Tudor times.
Yes,
in England.
I am a huge fan of these. I'm a huge fan of a lot of Philippa Gregory's series. That's actually one of the first historical romance series I read, but I didn't realize it was at the time. Do you remember the Other Boleyn Girl movie?
Yes.
So
yes.
That is.
I don't think I saw it, but I know of it.
So mm-hmm. That was based on, that was one of the Tudor novels that Philippa Gregory wrote. So I remember watching that and becoming interested in the book behind it, because you know how you and I always like to read the book when there's a movie or a TV show based on
yes.
a book. We have to read the book if we liked it. So.
Right.
I remember that. And also, I think there's now a series on her book, The White Queen, which is a different
oh, yeah.
series.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that book as well.
Yeah, I think my mom has read these books. I'll have to ask her about them because she actually might have them at home, but definitely sounds like good recommendations.
Yeah.
All right. So my friend Simone commented, she said The Tea Rose. And I think actually I'm looking at it now on Amazon. It's actually a series. The Tea Rose series by Jennifer Donnelly says that it's a historical fiction novel. And this Tea Rose is the first book in a trilogy about London's East End at the turn of the 19th century. So
I have not heard of it, but that sounds great.
Yeah. And I mean, I obviously could go into more of a description, but just that alone, just the time period sounds really interesting. So that would be one to look into.
Yes, I'm right. adding that series to my TBR as we speak.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Let's see, someone else said, my cousin actually said that she was going to read Highland Raven. It's a series, it's supposed to be a historical fiction series. I have not heard of that series, Highland Raven.
So I've read a few Highland or Scottish set romances, but they are ones that either Tessa Dare or Courtney Milan have written as part of their series. Courtney mm-hmm. Milan's may have been a standalone. I'm trying to remember if hers was part of a series. Other than that, I don't really have much experience with Highlander historical romance, but I know that that's a genre that a lot of people really like. And
okay, yeah.
I know you got a recommendation for Maya Banks, and she actually writes a lot of that Highlander historical romance, but the books of hers that I'm familiar with are from when I worked at the publishing company that we were talking about before, and I did some line edits on some of her other novels that weren't historical romance focused.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, some other recommendations. Someone recommended anything by Francine Rivers, who I'm not familiar with, but she recommended the book Redeemed as the first one to start with. So that's one to keep in mind. Someone else said Judy Garwood books.
Yes, Julie Garwood. Yes, she.
Oh, Julie, sorry, not Judy. Julie Garwood. I'm thinking of like Judy Garland.
Yes.
Julie Garwood.
Yes, Julie Garwood is very similar to Julia Quinn. So if you like books written by Julia Quinn, you would probably enjoy Julie Garwood.
All right, interesting. And the last one is actually the only man that commented. Actually, two men commented. One man said he liked the one about Einstein's wife, and another man commented and he said The Big Sky by A.B. Guthrie Jr. And apparently this is like a Western book. He said he thinks it would be a romance, but set in the American West. Yeah, so
yeah,
I haven't heard of that. Have you?
I have not heard of that one. And it looks like Amazon classifies it as a family saga. And a Western.
I love sagas.
So I'm not sure it counts as a romance, but I like where his head was at because we didn't have any recommendations so far in the Western subgenre.
Yeah, no, I also love sagas. And I do find that in a lot of these sagas, since it is covering someone's life, or, you know, during a certain time period, usually it does cover romance relationships that they have. So you're right. I can kind of see where he was going with that.
Right.
Good. Awesome. Well, those were some recommendations from some of my friends. And yeah, thanks to everyone who wrote in. We love hearing from listeners. And please feel free to drop us a line whenever you have something to share, like any other great book recommendations after listening to this episode.
Join us next time when we pick up where we left off and continue the conversation.
Check us out on Instagram at Susan and Whitney or send us an email at susanandwhitney@gmail.com.
That's S-U-S-A-N, the word and, W-H-I-T-T-N-E-Y.
Our awesome music is by Offshane, and our scripting and editing is by us.
Talk to you later.
Yay, I think we did a good job.